Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey folks, Hannah here. I'm jumping into your feed before today's episode to let you know that I have a brand new YouTube show called Making Worlds. Monthly episodes are released on our Witch Please Productions Patreon, and they are an absolute hoot. Every episode, I am joined by a cool guest to talk about a sci-fi or fantasy text that has inspired them to move differently in the world and to imagine otherwise. Our first episode was about Our Flag Means Death, and our second episode is about Dimension 20. I am a huge nerd about both of those franchises, so as you can imagine, I had the time of my life. You can watch the episodes or listen to them as a podcast right now by becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/awitchplease. You'll also get access to a backlog of many other perks. Again, head to patreon.com/awitchplease to become a supporter today for as little as $5 a month.
Hey witches, this is Marcel. Before we start this week's episode, I wanted to say a few things about what happened with the last episode. Many of you, hopefully most of you, heard the edited version where Hannah explains that a little bit has been edited out of the original episode. But some of you heard that original audio, and if you did, you heard me make a really shitty remark implying a causal relationship between genitals and gender. I want to address that remark with you because when we say hurtful things, it's important to take responsibility for them. Last week, Hannah took responsibility for it as the editor, and now it's my turn to take responsibility for it as the person who said the shitty thing in the first place. One of our listeners remarked on Twitter that what I said was demonstrative of the way that the attempt to overspecify with gender can often result in being trans-exclusive. This is totally correct. I would also add that what I said betrays some deeply internalized transphobia that I've been unlearning for years. Trans-exclusivity is a vile and violent social norm that weaves its way into supposedly feminist spaces all over the world. It's not something that can be unlearned without work, and for some of us, that means having a lot of humility. I'm really embarrassed by what I said. With some luck, and with some deep breathing, eventually I'll get over myself and my fallibility. Trans people never get a break from transphobia. It's everywhere, it's all the time, and it's everything from microaggressions to full-fledged hate speech and violence. It's being unable to find a place to go to the bathroom to being disowned by your family. It's not a small thing. It's astronomical. Listeners have been telling us for years how much Witch Please means to them as a safe and inclusive space. And in response, Hannah and I have tried to make it as inclusive as possible. We don't always succeed, as you know. But we try, and when we screw up, you tell us, and then we do better next time. This message is in part to make sure that I do better next time. But there's another reason why I wanted to talk about this. 2017 has been a rougher than usual year, with a lot of people feeling super on edge about politics, about being good enough, about allyship and what it means, and especially how being an ally means being able to hear it when someone calls you out for a shitty thing that you said, no matter how you meant it. This vulnerability is the part that keeps a lot of us silent. We're afraid of making mistakes, and we're afraid of not being good enough. Sometimes we're angry because no one gives us credit for all the times that we didn't say something shitty. That's not how being an ally works. I'm here to tell you right now that being an ally means you're going to screw up, and it really sucks. But you won't die from shame. And if you're never willing to hear how you can do better, you'll never do better. My therapist once told me that there's an important distinction between accepting yourself and being resigned about who you are. Accepting yourself for who you are is so, so important. And it doesn't mean that you can't learn and grow. You can be a good person who is worthy of love and respect and still have shortcomings. Your shortcomings don't define you, unless you let them by refusing to move past them. When I saw that I did a thing that made someone feel bad, I wanted to crawl into a hole and die. But I didn't, and neither will you. Thank you for listening. Thanks for being great. Here's our season finale.
Hello and welcome to Witch Please, a fortnightly-ish podcast about the Harry Potter world. I'm Hannah McGregor.
And I'm Marcel Cosman.
You sure are.
I am.
And here we are. It is already somehow the final episode of our second season. Mm-hmm. Our second season, notable for many reasons, including the fact that it is about 1/10 the length of our first.
You might even say it's our first season.
Yeah. It's the first time we've done a season since the first quote unquote season lasted 2 years. Mm-hmm. So normally in this introductory segment, we talk to each other about what the other person went off and did and recorded. But for this particular episode, what you're going to hear is the two of us together having a grand old time.
Just the best time.
Just a really good time. So instead, we're going to use this to chat a little bit about this season and what you can look forward to in the next season.
Mm-hmm. So, Hannah, how did you feel about the fact that we have a season format now that we're at the end of the first one?
I feel really unbelievably good about it. And I feel really good about it for three reasons, which I'm going to itemize now.
Reason the first.
I really like that having the sort of discrete season structure encourages us to think a little bit more about what the episodes are going to be about, about some of the other topics that we're interested in getting into. I think that that's really fun. Reason the second, I am very grateful that after this, I'm not making any more Witch Please episodes for a while. But reason the third, to offset reason the second, I think this is going to make the podcast a lot more sustainable, and I'm not ready to let it go.
I hope that this doesn't come across as me being a ding-dong, but I feel a little bit about editing this season finale the way that I felt about writing my last paper for my PhD coursework year, where I was like, I know that this topic is a thing I find really interesting, and I know that I chose it because I'm interested in it, and I know that I feel really good about writing good papers. I don't want to do it. I just want to like leave it to the absolute last possible fucking minute. Haven't I done enough already? Why do I have to do this?
Dear God, you monsters, what more do you want from me?
And like, honestly, this is the easiest possible episode that I could be facing.
Work.
I know.
You're just going to do this, like the intro and the conclusion, and then just like paste in the live episode in the middle.
Which I don't even have to do anything to.
You have to listen to it.
Which, as our listeners know, is my style.
Have you listened to any of the episodes I made this season?
I listened to at least one. But I can't remember now what the episodes were. You tell me what episodes you did and I'll tell you if I listened to them.
Oh, that's a great question. Who even knows? God, I listened to an episode about the cursed child with
Anna listened
James.
To that one, and it gave me a tremendous desire to see the cursed child. I listened to that one.
That one was really good. I made one about the one sec. Just gonna pull up our website.
Oh, the studio tour.
Thank you. Yep. Yeah, I did the one about the studio tour with Rochelle.
Yes, I listened to that one.
Oh, so I didn't listen to the Carry On one because it made me too anxious because I didn't like the book and I didn't.
Yeah, I had to edit out a lot of you being grumpy.
I didn't want to listen to it.
You know what? The episode turned out great. I edited the sound of fire behind every time that you ranted about how the book made you angry. And I edited an endless loop of a very cheesy, like, epic fantasy song behind my, like, 6 solid minute plot summary. It's, you know what? It's a fucking masterpiece.
People love it. People have commented that they really love the episode.
It was great. Do you have a favorite episode from this season?
That's a great question. What episodes did we do this season?
We did the live theater one with Anna James, the Fogo family one, your
Fogo family.
Live talk about the rise of white nationalism, my studio tour one with Rochelle, our collabo fan made musical one with Neil.
Oh God.
Your symphony orchestra one, and then the Melbourne Writers Festival one.
Oh, okay. So my favorite one that you did is definitely the Cursed Child one. That one gave me all kinds of feelings. And then my favorite one that I did is the music one with Steve, because I really had a good time integrating the music into that episode. But that's also the episode that I stayed up until 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah, you sure did. You put a lot of work into that episode.
So I also hate that episode so much. I hate that episode with every fiber of my being. But it's mostly because I hate myself, not because I hate the episode.
Yeah.
Yeah. What about you?
My favorite episode to record was, it's really hard to say whether it was the Cursed Child one or the studio tour one. Those ones are like kind of tied in my heart because they were like both part of a very, very exciting trip and a really exciting opportunity to like talk to some awesome, smart women, which is like my favorite thing to do.
But
my favorite episode that you did was for sure the Fogos one.
Oh, yeah.
Which made me openly weep while sitting on a bus.
Yeah. I
love Cheryl Fogo so much.
Like, that family is just, they're just the best family. Everybody with a family should aim to be that kind of family.
Yeah.
Yeah, they just, like, love each other.
Yeah, it's so beautiful.
Yeah, that was definitely, that was a very special experience.
Yeah.
For sure.
Yeah. So what do you say, Marcel? Shall we consider carrying on this episode and season format?
I mean, we could, but we could also just go back to recording every 2 weeks and editing every 2 weeks, irrespective of all of the busy things happening in our lives, and just die. We could just die.
I really have a very, very strong image of you just like a skeleton hunched over a laptop, finger hovering over the mouse. Like the image of a skeleton with big editing headphones on.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
A Hedwig t-shirt draped loosely over your bones.
Yep. I know. An empty glass of wine. A bottle on the floor.
Oh, you are gonna one day just become that skeleton from The Last Unicorn, huh?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. That's my end goal. If dear listeners, if you're still with us. If you've never seen The Last Unicorn, when you do, just know that that skeleton is my skeleton.
I
remember.
when you do your first episode of Secret Feminist Agenda, do you want to talk about The Last Unicorn?
Oh my God, I do. That's a great idea.
Yeah, we should watch it and then record an episode about it. Can listeners look forward to next season?
Oh, great question. Thanks. Well, Hannah. There is just so much more in the great wide world of Harry Potter fandom. So I think listeners can look forward to us continuing our deep dive into fandom and its various iterations, both professional and canonical, as well as non-canonical and totally out of this world.
Totally, totally, totally love totally out of this world. One of the things I'm really excited to do next season is more sort of FOGO-style episodes where we talk to interesting fans about what the books have meant in their lives. We already have a couple of really interesting people lined up who are going to talk to us about their own sort of readings and interactions with the texts that come from outside our own experiences. And so we're going to cast really interesting new light on what Harry Potter can mean to people.
Yeah.
Oh, we also have another trip on the horizon. So there's going to be some more sort of site-based episodes. We'll talk more about that in the outro. So you have that to look forward to as well.
Yeah.
Marcel, I have another question for you.
Bring it.
So one of the topics that I know we're interested in looking at more next season is fan-made films. Are we also going to talk about fan fiction?
No.
We're not. No.
No. No. And that's, I mean, that's a great question. It's a question that we have been asked by a number of people. Both people who write fan fiction as well as people who are avid readers of fan fiction and who love fan fiction. And the reason why we're not going to do that is because the thing that is the most time consuming for us to do as part of this podcast is reading. And it's also the thing that makes it's also the thing that we do the most for our jobs.
Yeah.
And it makes it really hard to read for pleasure when your pleasure reading is also work reading. And so at this point in time, we just have to take a hard line on not reading fan fiction because we, at this point, don't have time in our personal lives to do more reading. We just don't. And so that stinks. But that does open up opportunities for us to invite people to talk to us about fan fiction themselves, who might maybe be more experts than we are at reading fan fiction, if that makes sense.
Yeah. On the topic of the new Witch Please motto, which is just just say no to reading. Witch Please, just say no to reading. We also love all of the recommendations for other fantasy books that you think we should do episodes about. And we're really unlikely to do that as well for exactly the same reason, which is that we both read professionally and value sort of carving out a portion of our reading for pleasure reading. And one of the definitions of pleasure reading is that you're doing it because you want to, not because you feel any sense of obligation to do it, which isn't to say that I will never look at a, what sounds like an awesome fantasy series that you guys recommend and go and read that. You know, I always appreciate recommendations. The nature of recommendations is that you don't necessarily have to take them. but that does mean that we're really unlikely to do those, more of those books as episodes, just because the doing episodes sort of turns it from fun into obligation.
Fun-bligation. Yeah. So don't stop sending your recommendations. Just don't feel hurt if we don't make an episode about the thing that you want us to read.
No, but they're really wonderful. And I know that a lot of people on Twitter also really, really appreciate getting them. So don't stop sending them.
Totally.
And who knows? Maybe at some point we'll get to make podcasts as our full-time jobs. And then we can, then our work reading will be our podcast reading and it will all be perfect.
That would be out of this world.
It would be a goddamn delight. Speaking of goddamn delights, shall we tell people a little bit about what is going to happen in this episode?
Yeah, that's a great idea. So we were invited to participate in the Melbourne Writers Festival. If you are not familiar with geography, Melbourne is as far away from Canada as you can get.
It's very far away. It's in Australia.
yeah.
And so when we were invited, We were not, in fact, invited to fly to Melbourne.
Which we couldn't have done.
They didn't tell us we weren't allowed to, but that's not what they offered. And that's for the best because it would have been not feasible.
Mm-hmm.
Instead, they offered to set up a live webcast from Edmonton so that we could sort of live stream into the festival. So we got together in Edmonton to do this live video episode. And I don't know. We haven't worked out topics around the permissions yet vis-a-vis releasing the video. But we're sure as heck releasing the audio. Here you go.
You're welcome.
How do you think we know when it starts? It's like, how do we know when it starts? Yeah, that's a dead giveaway. But there's a huge version of our own faces on the screen in front of us. Hello and welcome, Melbourne, Australia, to the Witch Please live stream. I'm Hannah McGregor.
And I'm Marcel Cosman. If this is your first time encountering Witch Please, which is our podcast, we are a fortnightly-ish podcast about the Harry Potter world.
We used to be fortnightly, that's every 2 weeks, but now we're using a seasons format so we can keep the podcast running as long as possible because we really like talking about Harry Potter.
We should also let you know, again, if this is your first time encountering us, that most of our, all of our episodes, just in general, our podcast has an explicit rating because we use a lot of swear words, but we won't do that today. Today is a 100% family-friendly event, and we will keep it tidy.
We're going to be good.
Very good.
We've never done a live stream before, so this is going to be a bit of an experiment with the magic of technology. Mm-hmm. It's going to be really intimidating because I can see me on a screen, and it's very distracting. So what we're going to do is we're going to chat a little bit with all of you about some of our many Harry Potter top five lists. Mm-hmm. We're going a bit BuzzFeed-y today. Mm-hmm. And in the meantime, we're hoping that you're going to tweet some questions at us. So in the second half, we can do a kind of Q&A thing.
Yeah. So this is our hashtag here. You can ask us anything you want about the Harry Potter world or about podcasting, you know what? Yeah, let's just keep it to those two things, but emphasis on the Harry Potter. Ask us anything you want, and please use the hashtag WitchPleaseMWF. The screen that I have in front of me, it's a mirror image. Hopefully it's not a mirror image for you. But just use that hashtag so that we can find your tweets, and we will answer your questions as best we can.
Fantastic. All right, let's get started. I'm going to ask you, Marcel, for your first top five list. What's it going to be?
I have a top five list of spells from the Harry Potter world that I need in real life. The first one is Accio, but because I'm not a Latin speaker, I don't know for sure if that's how it's pronounced.
May or may not be Accio?
Accio.
That sounds like it's a spell for male body spray.
Oh, yes. Accio is when you want to smell good before going on a date, but you don't actually end up smelling good. And so Accio or Accio is the first one. That is so that I can find the things that I've lost. I would like Scourgify to clean things because I'm always spilling food on myself.
Mm-hmm. And I have a young child.
And I have a young child who is always just blatantly smearing me with things.
Just that baby hippogriff really likes to just take a banana and just
smear it. So cute. It's really, you can also ask me questions about my child. Both Hannah and I would be glad to answer questions about how cute this child is. And I would like to have the spell Aguamenti because I'm often very thirsty and I would like to make water happen whenever.
Oh, that's great. Mm-hmm. That's great.
Alohomora to get in to unlock things. And then the one that I'm most excited about and I can't wait until I have it in real life, is Incendio, so I can set things on fire.
Sometimes, you know what? Sometimes you just need to burn something down.
Exactly.
Can I ask you a real quick question before we move on to my first list? Mm-hmm. If there is a spell in the wizarding world that lets you just like bring water, why have they not solved the water shortage crises in the world?
in like the world in general.
Yeah.
I think it's because it's a Muggle crisis.
Yeah. Okay. Fair. That's not their problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Wizards are not known for their like fondness for Muggles.
Okay.
That's my guess. That's just my guess.
Just let them stay thirsty.
What about you, Hannah? Mm-hmm. What is your first top five?
Mm-hmm. My first top five is my top five favorite fan theories. Mm. I'm pretty obsessed with fan theories. Now, I'm limiting this to theories that are on the wacky side, because legitimate fan theories are actually just critical interpretations, and those are great, but not funny. Mm-hmm. So, number five.
I'm ready.
Dumbledore chooses his defense against the dark arts teachers primarily in order to troll Snape.
Whoa, rude. That's good. I like that.
Right? Like, he chooses Lockhart clearly as a joke, mm-hmm. and then he chooses a literal werewolf. Like, oh, you want that job to teach students to defend themselves? I'm going to hire a literal werewolf to do it instead.
Who is best friends with your arch nemesis?
Also, Voldemort once. Too bad, Snape.
Spoilers.
Sorry. Ooh, there's going to be a lot of spoilers. I hope you've all read Harry Potter. I trust you've all read Harry Potter.
It's a great series of books.
Number four, this is a countdown. All of my top fives are countdowns. Mm-hmm. Number four, Harry is actually a Horcrux. Mm-hmm. And that, we know, sorry, that's the spoilerest spoiler of all. And that is why the Dursleys are so mean to him.
Oh, because he just causes people to be mean.
Right?
And nasty.
Remember how mean Ron was mm-hmm. when he was like wearing the locket. So that's mm-hmm. just like 11 years or 10. 10 mm-hmm. years of that. Mm-hmm. Dursleys couldn't help themselves. That's just the bad magic made them do it.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
Number three. Mm-hmm. This one's a particularly cunning one. Dumbledore is deaf. Okay, bear with me.
Deaf.
Or deaf, D-E-A-T-H.
Deaf.
And specifically deaf as appears in the story, in the tale of Beedle the Bard, the story of the three brothers. So in the story of the three brothers, we have Death appearing and giving these three magical objects out. The three mm-hmm. magical objects are the Invisibility Cloak, the Resurrection Stone, and the Elder Wand, who has all three of those objects and gives them out in the series. It's Dumbledore.
It's a good theory.
Just saying.
I like it.
Yeah. Yeah, it's airtight. Don't poke it. Do not poke any holes in these theories. I'm not interested in hearing it. Theory number two.
I'm ready.
Malfoy is a werewolf.
It's a great theory.
Okay, I love this one because it relies on close reading. So, at the beginning of book six,
That's a new one.
It's a new one. Malfoy goes to Bergen and Borks.
Bergen and Borks.
Borgen and Borks. Who knows? A store. And
Bergen and Borks. That's funny.
Borgen and Borks. Bergen and Borks. And shows the shopkeep something on his arm that scares him, and then says that his family is close personal friends with Fenrir Greyback. We are led to believe that is the Dark Mark, because that's what Harry assumes it is, mm-hmm. but nobody in the book ever actually sees Malfoy's Dark Mark. And so it could just as easily be a werewolf bite. He specifically mentions Fenrir Greyback. It all adds up.
Mm-hmm.
Refuse. Oh, there's one other thing that it explains really effectively. It's a really good reason why Narcissa Malfoy would turn on Voldemort in the end.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
She has nothing to lose unless her son is a werewolf.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I love fan theory. Okay. And fan theory number one, Rumbledore.
I love Rumbledore.
AKA Dumbledore is a time-traveling Ron Weasley comeback from the future. The evidence for that is almost exclusively the fact that they both have long noses and like candy. Also, one time, Dumbledore is asked what he wants for Christmas, and he says a pair of warm socks, and that's what Ron always gets from his mother for Christmas.
Broke your GD heart, didn't I?
That's so sweet. Top five fan theories.
Oh my goodness, that's beautiful. I like those. My next top five mm-hmm. is a list of foods and drinks from the Harry Potter universe that I would like to have in real life.
Number one, I think we can all agree, butterbeer.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Butterbeer sounds great. I know that some people have had the luxury of having butterbeer. I have not.
Here's my question. I have a lot of questions. In the books. Mm-hmm. If the books were real, the books are real.
Mm-hmm.
So in the real world of the books.
Okay. I'm with you.
You with me?
Yeah.
Is butterbeer vegan? Or does it contain butter?
I think it's cream soda, but a wizard version of cream soda.
Okay.
But I don't think it's vegan.
Cream soda is vegan. It doesn't have real cream.
The pink soda pop version of cream soda is vegan.
There's another version of cream soda?
Yeah, that's where cream soda comes from.
I'm so confused. Okay, butterbeer. Keep going.
Butterbeer. But I bet that you could make it vegan.
Yeah, how? I need somebody to use the hashtag witchpleasemwf to give me a quick vegan butterbeer recipe. Keep going, Marcel.
You know, I have had a... I made a butterbeer once by taking... Were those originals vegan?
No.
Okay. Well, then, never mind. Anyway. Well,
could you please finish telling us real quick what you did with Werther's Original?
You take a beer, preferably a cream ale, which I can't have because I can't have gluten, but you take a beer, preferably a cream ale, and you put a Werther's Original in your glass, and then you put a little bit of Butter Ripple Schnapps. I don't know if you have that in Australia.
I don't know if they have Werther's Originals. We don't know anything about Australia.
A butterscotch candy. And then some kind of butterscotch schnapps. And then it's a tasty treat. Anyway, that's number one. Number two,
mm-hmm.
and bear with me, chocolate. I know we have chocolate. But I would like to have the kind of chocolate that Lupin has that will make me feel better after a Dementor attack.
I mean, chocolate does make me feel better after a Dementor attack anyway.
Maybe you should tell me what brand of chocolate you're eating.
Right. Okay. Okay. I've got to say, as a, you know what? No, I'm going to save this thought for when you're done your beautiful list. Keep going.
That was number two. Number three, the thing that is known as pumpkin pasties. Which I imagine to be a savory vegan alternative to meat pies.
You know what? I always assumed that it was a pumpkin spice flavored homemade Pop-Tart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't think so. Mm-hmm. I think it's like a meat pie, except it's filled with pumpkin and maybe curry. I bet it's delicious.
That sounds really good.
And then number one is Ogden's Old Fire Whiskey. I'm curious. I would like to know if it would make me breathe fire.
I think it would. I think that's the magic. I'm sensing a theme in your top five list.
Theme in my life.
Okay. So I have a question for you quick before we go on to the next one, which is, why do you think that delicious treats have such an important status in the Harry Potter book?
You know, I think food and drinks in general in the Harry Potter books are super important. And part of that is because Harry was deprived so much when he was living with the Dursleys that, you know, we all know that if it's not part of Harry's journey, we don't learn about it. And so for Harry, the food and the drinks in the wizarding world are just that extra special layer of what makes that world his home, mm-hmm. as opposed to the life of deprivation that he experienced before he found out that he was a wizard, Harry.
Oh, he's a wizard, Harry.
He's a wizard, Harry.
You're a wizard, Harry.
That's my answer.
That's a good answer.
Thanks. Thank you. How about next?
What you got? Next, top five worst characters. Okay, I'm going to start. It's the tie, number five.
Can I ask you a quick question before you start?
You sure can.
How are you interpreting worst? What does worst mean to you?
Would like them to be not in the book.
Ooh, good. Good. Yeah. Okay.
So I'm not going to include people like Voldemort, who's obviously like very bad, but
the objective worst.
Who's like quite bad.
Yeah.
But it would be difficult to move the plot forward without him.
Yes.
Yeah.
Good.
So people who I would just rather we just.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Number five is a tie between Justin Finn Fletchley and Ernie McMillan.
You know, those are very good. Good. I 100% back those.
Not a fan. Do you remember that scene in Dueling Club where the snake sort of goes, it just sort of goes, and then Harry tries to tell it to stop, and then it almost eats Justin Finfletchley, and then Ernie McMillan is like, you made that snake eat my friend almost.
They're both terrible.
Yeah.
Tag team. Okay, good.
Number four.
I'm ready.
Scabbers. Okay, bear with me here.
Okay.
Wormtail is fine.
Yeah.
It's really gross that he spends 3 years sleeping in Ron's bed. I don't like it. I do not like. I don't like that his name is Scabbers.
Mm-mm.
I am not a fan.
Mm-hmm. Even more years if you count the years he spent with Percy.
Ugh. Gross.
Mm-hmm.
It's gross. I don't like it.
Yeah.
Get rid of it.
It's terrible.
All right. Number three.
Mm-hmm.
Cornelius Fudge.
Oh, terrible.
Just the worst. Might actually be the biggest villain of the books in mm-hmm. some ways, right? Like more than any of the actual villains. He's just this like figure of like cowardice and the desire to live in ignorance. And like he just, you know, like he's probably going forward to the plot in the most important ways, but mm-hmm. I'm just like profoundly not interested in Fudge and his like, I have a great idea. I'm going to like continue my own political power by gaslighting a child for a year and turning the entire media against him. So
yeah,
done with you, Fudge.
Okay. You're right.
Yeah.
You are 100% correct.
Yeah. Number two,
mm-hmm.
Aragog. Don't like him. Big spider. Not a fan.
Mm-mm.
Not a fan.
Mm-mm.
Big spider eats children.
Mm-hmm.
Physical manifestation of Hagrid's propensity to make bad decisions.
Mm-hmm. 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 Yeah, no, don't like that. But
what?
The source of my favorite.
Oh,
my favorite.
That's a really
meme.
When Harry does this.
Yeah.
When he does this. You know what? I take it back.
We so didn't have Aragog. Harry would never do this.
So now it's a top four list. Number one?
Number one.
Snape.
Really?
Forget that guy.
Ooh.
Not interested.
Ooh. Ooh. Controversial. Tell me more.
Come at me, beloved people of Melbourne, Australia. I've gone on the record for this before, but I think the sort of Snape is a tragic romantic figure is that whole thing where people like get tattoos that say like, still ? Always, period.
Mm.
I think that it really romanticizes Snape's obsession with Lily. And that was an obsession where like Lily had pretty clearly drawn some boundaries and said mm-hmm. like, you know, I'm not interested in furthering our relationship. And mm-hmm. mostly that's because of the way that you abuse and harass other people who like me are not pure blood,
mm-hmm.
who are muggle born. And Snape not only doesn't change his behavior because he continues to be really horrible to non-Slytherin kids in his own classes,
mm-hmm.
But he also like refuses to respect Lily's ability to say no to him by continuing to be obsessed with her and to use that obsession as an excuse to be real mean to her kid.
I agree.
I know people well love him. I know people love him, but really you should save your love for Lupin.
Mm-hmm.
He earns it.
Yeah.
By being tender and gentle and kind.
Do you want to talk a little bit about the Snape of the Cursed Child production that you saw? Because you had mentioned that Snape made you...
I did like the Snape of the Cursed Child.
Yeah.
I did. I like Snape and Cursed Child. I don't want to spoil the Cursed Child for people who might be planning on seeing it. So I will just say that the Snape we see in the Cursed Child may have kind of changed my mind a little bit, but I don't like the Snape in the books. I obviously love Alan Rickman, so the Snape in the movies can stay.
Yeah.
But book Snape? No.
Great.
No. Replace him with a woman, please.
That's great. Wonderful.
Marcel, next list.
So as I mentioned already, we only really know things that are part of Harry's journey. And this is a sort of, not joke, but a sort of gesture back to when J.K. Rowling revealed that Dumbledore is a queer character and that it never came up in the books because it wasn't relevant to Harry's journey. This has sparked a kind of, for lack of a better word, meme of people replying and challenging that with other things that Harry never noticed because... or that were never mentioned explicitly in the books because they weren't relevant to Harry's journey. So I'm going to start by saying that two of these are mine. the first one that I say and the last one that I say, well, not mine. I mean, they're
the books.
They're the books.
Yeah, you made them up.
But I
off the old dumb piece.
I mean, one of them comes from our conversations on which place. So I'll start with that one. I can't claim full responsibility for this one. But the first one is that Remus Lupin is in love with Sirius Black. Harry never notices this and just takes for granted that he and Tonks are in love and that they get married and have a child together because they're in love. But I question this. I think that Lupin was in love with Sirius. And, like, it makes sense. Anyway.
Yeah, I mean, the scene, the reunion scene in the Shrieking Track is beautiful.
I know.
It's a beautiful and tender scene.
I know. I know. Yeah. I know. It's a tragedy. The next one, two, the next three come from Tumblr. Number two, Sirius Black was an amateur yodeler. It's never mentioned because it wasn't relevant to Harry's journey.
I just feel like that would have been really relevant to Harry's journey, though.
I'm sorry. I reordered these. I'm sorry. Okay, this next one is also mine. This is born of my own tender wit. Snape is celiac, but refuses to follow a strict gluten-free diet, and that's why he's so pale. It's his iron deficiency. But, like, also to Snape's credit, it's probably really hard to be gluten-free at Hogwarts because everything is bread.
Everything is bread, and also, I feel like considering the difficulty that Harry has communicating his desires to Dobby, it may be difficult to express dietary concerns with the headphones.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey folks, Hannah here. I'm jumping into your feed before today's episode to let you know that I have a brand new YouTube show called Making Worlds. Monthly episodes are released on our Witch Please Productions Patreon, and they are an absolute hoot. Every episode, I am joined by a cool guest to talk about a sci-fi or fantasy text that has inspired them to move differently in the world and to imagine otherwise. Our first episode was about Our Flag Means Death, and our second episode is about Dimension 20. I am a huge nerd about both of those franchises, so as you can imagine, I had the time of my life. You can watch the episodes or listen to them as a podcast right now by becoming a Patreon supporter at patreon.com/awitchplease. You'll also get access to a backlog of many other perks. Again, head to patreon.com/awitchplease to become a supporter today for as little as $5 a month.
Oh my gosh.
Whew. Do you think that there's a peanut ban at Hogwarts?
A peanut ban? Well, no, remember how J.K. Rowling says that wizards don't have mundane magical or mundane maladies or... Anyway.
Please, I get that. Please, I have for that claim.
So there's probably a student uprising, a bunch of students who are allergic to peanuts, who are like, you have to stop making things with peanuts, but it's not relevant to Harry's journey.
Okay, so we don't get to see it. Okay, all right.
Okay, I really like this one, but it's not the best one. This is the second best one.
Okay.
Dumbledore is rollerblading in every scene. He hasn't walked for 30 years. It was never mentioned because it's not relevant to Harry's journey. he's just rollerblading.
How did he get up the spiral staircase to his office?
He's a wizard.
He is a wizard. That's a really good point.
Okay. And then this is number five, my favorite. Professor McGonagall's cat form is actually a big fur suit. Whenever she transforms, she has to physically get into and out of the fur suit. It was never mentioned because it's not relevant to Harry's journey.
Just a second. Just gotta... This should always be a video. We should always do this as a video because then we could do more physical tags. We have a segment on the original season of the podcast called The Boy Who Narrated, which is named after, you know, the boy who lived. And one of the basic premises of The Boy Who Narrated, for those who haven't listened before, is that the entire book series is narrated from Harry's perspective. So we miss a lot of stuff that Harry doesn't reference, but there's always this assumption that if Harry leaves it out, it probably isn't important. But I think that list really disproved that.
I mean, McGonagall's big fursuit is
so
super important.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay. Homer. We've got time for one last list, and
yep.
then we're going to head over to the hashtag because we see some populating as it goes through the magic of technology, which is the opposite of magic. Okay. This is in honor of our favorite regular podcast segment. Granger Danger. Insert sound effect. There's a sound effect.
There's a lightning bolt.
This is my top five Hermione moments. Now, here's a really important thing. Four of these five moments never happen in the books. Because so much of what's going on with Hermione doesn't make it into the books because it isn't a part of Harry's journey.
It's not relevant.
So we don't get to see it. But this is all stuff that, like, the books very clearly, and it's almost all stuff that happens in the summer. Okay. Number one.
I'm ready.
Wait, number five. That's how countdowns work.
You count down the other.
You count down
properly.
Yeah, I know how to count down. The summer that Hermione spent buying herself a fun beaded handbag, casting an undetectable expansion charm on it, and then carefully packing a camping trip worth of supplies. Right? All of that time, like, we get the reveal where Hermione's like, no worries, the stylish handbag that I have has an entire tent and also food and also a small library. But, like, when I picture Hermione, like, out at a shop, choosing which fun beaded handbag is going to be the one she packs everything in, and then making a very careful itemized list of camping supplies, going through her library, deciding what book, like, there's all of this backstory of Hermione, like, putting together that collection. And it's classic Hermione. It's stylish, magically powerful, and also practical. I love Hermione a lot.
She knew she was maybe never going to see her parents again when she bought that handbag.
I'm going to just slide. Just going to sit here with my face on the desk until we're done.
If you've never listened to Witch Please, there's also a lot of crying. We get a little emotional. We're not crying today, though. There's no crying in live streams.
No, that would be unflattering.
Number four,
the summer before arriving at Hogwarts for the first time, sitting in her bedroom reading Hogwarts A History so that she'll know her way around the school before she arrives and she won't feel like an outsider even though she's a muggle. Gonna make you cry if it's list, aren't I?
Yes.
Top five. Number three, picture this. It's the summer between second and third year. In second year, Hermione accidentally turned herself...
Hello.
How are we doing?
Is everything okay?
Yeah, just checking the camera.
Great. Love it. I mean, we look amazing. In second year, Hermione accidentally turned herself into a cat when the Polyjuice potion
That's
went
right.
wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And at the beginning of third year, she turns up with, what's that? A pet cat. You know what happened in the
what
summer
happened?
In between? Hermione couldn't stop thinking about how silky and lustrous her own coat was. She was thinking about how nice it was to just pet herself when she was a kitty. And she was like, gosh, I wish I had a kitty.
And then she gets a kitty.
And then she gets a kitty. Number two. A note.
Mm-hmm.
These have all been summer moments. And that is because summers are when Hermione has the time to get stuff done without distraction instead of cleaning up after Ron and Harry.
And studying.
Yeah, she's busy. Summer is when she does her extracurriculars.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so number two is obviously at some point, She contacted Professor McGonagall and said, could I please use some entirely forbidden magic so that I can take two students' worth of course loads at the same time? And I really like to picture Hermione sitting down and writing that letter and sending it to Professor McGonagall at home.
At home?
At home. Yeah, obviously at home. It happened over the summer. McGonagall's not at school yet.
I thought that they lived in their offices.
They don't live in their offices. You're an adult now. You know that teachers have homes. Okay. Number one. That time she punches Draco.
That's a good one. Always punch Nazis.
That's it.
Wonderful. Okay.
Okay.
Well.
How's everyone doing? You can't respond to us or do anything to tell us how it's going, so we're going to assume.
They can tweet at us.
It's going great. Yeah, will you tweet at us and tell us if anything is going tragically wrong?
Ooh, there are pictures.
Look at us. We're so cute.
We are very cute.
Oh, my lipstick was amazing.
Oh, thanks to all of you who say that we look great, too. That's really nice of you.
That's so lovely. Okay, some questions.
All right.
This one from...
Well, sorry. Yep.
Oh, my gosh.
Yep, you're ready.
These are just... Okay. Yes, this one is from Megan Smog, who says, which Harry Potter character has, in your opinion, changed the most over the course of the podcast? Oh, no. Has our opinion on changed the most over the course of the podcast? That's more important.
For me, I would say Snape, because I definitely started out going with the trend of he's a tragic figure, even though I don't think my heart was in it. Oh, there you go. We saw you for a second, and
we
could
see
awesome.
You for a moment. It was so exciting.
There you are. Hello.
You just showed up on our screen. It was really thrilling.
Hello. So for me, it would be Snape. I definitely by the end of the books decided that no, he just stinks through and through.
Great.
Yeah.
Great.
Fantastic. How about you?
I think Ron.
Ron.
Yeah, I think I was an anti-Ron person the first time through when I read the books. I think I didn't really see his point. But a lot of our lovely listeners are really sort of in Camp Ron and have defended him very strongly and all the things he represents, like loyalty and his sort of ongoing friendship to Harry, no matter how hard things get. I think I've come around to seeing Ron as a character who has a lot to offer.
He grows. Oops. Sorry. Okay. I'm also just seeing this tweet that asked us to lean closer to the microphone. So we'll do that. I'm sorry that we didn't do that before. Let's see.
Can you move the microphone or will it explode?
I don't want to touch it. Oh, I'm afraid it will hurt their ears.
How about we just talk louder?
Yeah. Okay. This question comes from Jess Jane, who asks, what exactly is the political structure of the wizarding, I'm assuming wizarding world? Jessica thinks it's an oligarchy, but what do we think? That's a really interesting question. I chose it before
realizing you had to answer it.
I don't know if I would call it an oligarchy.
I think the implication is that it is to some degree a democracy because Fudge is called a minister,
yeah.
Right? So the implication there, at least, seems to me that he's being voted in. You know, maybe we don't have multiple other representative ministers, but the wizarding world is comparatively pretty small.
But we never see anyone vote, and we never see anyone talk about voting. The only time we hear people talking about, like, being chosen is through the...
Wizengamot.
The Wizengamot, yeah. Yeah, okay, bear with me.
Okay.
This is coming to me right now. What if it's a theocracy or a theocratic type state or, you know, part of whatever. But where magic functions in place of religion. And so the people who are more magical and more powerful in that magical community tend to get those positions of power, but Fudge isn't, we
Fudge
don't
isn't
know
powerful.
Anything.
Yeah. Maybe it's a combined democracy and theocracy. We've got a sort of like the Wizengamot, which is like a group of people who sort of advise, mm-hmm. and then we've got an elected official. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the only thing that would suggest that there's a lack of elections. I mean, Harry never mentions them, but it
may just not be relevant to his journey.
So it's totally possible there's elections and we never get to see him turn 18, so he can't vote.
Maybe they vote at 17 because they come of age at 17, but but by that point, the ministry has already fallen, and so there are probably no free and fair elections. Okay.
All right, let's keep going.
It's nice to see your tweets about how you like the things we say. How about the... Oh, wait.
The same question.
Is it?
Oops. Oh, my God, I love this one.
Okay, what is it?
Jess O'Callaghan. Hi, Jess.
Hey.
Says, we all know about James Potter's mates. If you had to invent three women friends for Lily Evans, what would they be like?
Oh, this is such a good question.
Really good question.
Okay,
number one,
mm-hmm.
I want Lily to have a friend who is, like, specifically better at Quidditch than James.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever James is getting really showy about, like, how cool he is, Lily's like awesome friend Gertrude comes along and is like, yeah, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Not even impressed.
Mm-hmm.
Not even impressed. Way better at Quidditch than you.
Mm-hmm. 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 I like that. Do you think that in Lily's friend group, she is the studious one, or do you think she has an even more studious type friend, like a Hermione figure friend, who is always helping her with her homework because she's off doing awesome stuff,
yeah.
and doesn't have time to do the homework.
I think Lily's kind of the daredevil. Like, I think she's the one who sort of, that like is a little bit risk-taking, mm-hmm. a little bit more edgy. So maybe she has that friend who's like really diligent and like a little bit nervous sometimes about the things that Lily wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
Lily sort of pushes this friend out of her comfort zone.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I would also really like Lily to have another Muggle-born friend. I would really like for Lily to not be the only Muggle-born person in her little tight-knit community of people, so that she has a pal who gets her experience.
I'm picturing right now Lily's, the final member of this group, is another Muggle-born friend who is like a huge gaming nerd and like tries to sneak an Xbox into Hogwarts and is like always playing first person shooters when she's supposed to be studying magic. She's like, why do I need magic? I have the magic of video games. Okay, we've got a few minutes left. We're gonna try to do a couple more.
I wonder if it's pronounced Heba or Heba. And the hashtag is Hibse, wants to know, why is Hermione's sacrifice erasing herself from her parents' memories not given greater weight in the books? And I'm just going to get out of the way the it's not relevant to Harry's journey joke because I can. So I'm just going to get that out of the way. And I am going to imagine that maybe it's because since Harry doesn't have a close relationship with his parents, with the Dursleys, and because his biological parents are dead and he is just always sort of grappling with that, my guess is that he doesn't understand what would be difficult about that in, mm-hmm. say, maybe the way that Ron does, right? I imagine that maybe Ron and Hermione bond over that.
Yeah. There's also something really powerful about like the really quiet heroism of that, right? That like a lot of the time Hermione's heroism isn't like larger than life in the same kinds of ways that Harry's is.
Mm-hmm.
Like Hermione does these things that are like often kind of selfless, you know, in a way that's pretty gendered.
Mm-hmm.
But that's an act where she's doing something to keep her parents safe. And it's
mm-hmm.
not, you know, it's not a showy act. She's not going to get a lot of public acclaim for that, but it's really brave.
Yeah. That's a great question. My heart breaks.
I know, it's so sad. Oh. Okay, this is from Rach G. That's Rach G A4235580. Is that just your phone number? Anyway, asking, if one character could have a spin-off book all about them, who would it be and what would happen?
Okay. I can't remember how we decided that her name is pronounced, but Merope, anyway, Voldemort's mother, is just this character who haunts me to my core because we don't know nearly enough about her. And I'm so fascinated. And I know that it is 100% not acceptable to drug somebody and engage in intimate activity with them. It is never acceptable. So I'm not asking for a story that explains or apologizes for that, but I want to know her history. I want to know what happens in her life. I want to know more details. We have some hints, but I remain so troubled by the fact that we don't know enough about her. And I would love a spin-off book about her.
Yeah. What's the name of the Care of Magical Creatures teacher who takes over when Hagrid's gone?
Professor Grubbly Plank.
Her. I just really love the teachers who we get almost like Madame Hooch.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, I want to know, these are like interesting, competent adults who are like teaching sometimes, but a lot of the other time are probably doing something like really, really dope and awesome and like are obviously super good at magic. And if Neville is the kind of person who becomes the next generation of teacher, I would like to know the backstories of the people who are this generation of teacher beyond just Dumbledore. Like, yeah, I'm excited for some Dumbledore backstory, of course, but like, give me some Grubbly Plank.
Yeah. We have talked on the podcast before about how awesome it would be for an HBO miniseries type program just called Hogwarts. Mm. That's just about the professors and their lives. And they're probably super fascinating and intriguing and complicated and messy and hopefully very sexy lives.
We want the gritty Harry Potter reboot that everyone's been waiting for.
Exactly. And you know, if some of the episodes take place during our main character's arc, that those would kind of happen in the background, but they wouldn't be central to the story. That would be really cool.
Somebody just pointed out on Twitter, this is Alice on the March, just said Professor Grubbly Plank and Madame Hooch were totally a couple.
We agree.
Yes.
Yes, they were.
Correct.
Yes, they
excellent.
Were.
A+ interpretation. All right. I think, do we have one more? Last question we're going to answer, because according to my time we have 2 minutes. This question is from Jess Jane again. Great job, Jess. Do you also feel betrayed that Harry became a wizard cop and not a teacher?
He was such a good teacher. He was an incredibly good teacher. He would have been Can you imagine him and Neville being teachers at Hogwarts together?
Just sitting in the teacher's lounge drinking coffee.
Oh my gosh.
Oh no. I mean, it's just like, it's such an important part of Harry's journey, because that's, you know, all we see is the things that are important to Harry's journey. Mm-hmm. Him learning to teach, right? Like, he comes into his own when he starts teaching, when he starts like taking his fellow students in and showing them how to do spells and showing them the way that the experiences that he's had that were maybe like scary and hard experiences translate into these really amazing confidence building lessons for all of his peers. And to imagine what it would be like for him to then take that a step further and as an adult get to communicate that to kids. And maybe to like other kids who also had like kind of hard childhoods and maybe feel like they don't fit in, he would have been a great teacher.
He really would.
Yeah, that was a real... Yeah. Listen, I know J.K. Rowling wrote the books, but we all make mistakes sometimes. All right, it's 8:29. I mean, whatever time it is there, it's 8:29 on Saturday night. Hi, we know
we're gonna
party.
We're gonna go wild later. A friend of ours defended her dissertation. We're gonna go celebrate with her.
We gotta go to a party. So. We are gonna head out. So we're gonna say goodbye. If you enjoyed any part of this, you can tweet at us at @owitchplease, or you can find us at owitchplease.ca. Keep the tweets coming. We will respond to them once we are offline, which should be any second now.
This is a real pleasure. Thank you all so much for coming. It's really nice to see your beautiful faces. Have a great rest of the Writers Festival.
See you later. Just gonna sit here until somebody tells us we're off air.
Okay.
How's it going?
We don't know what to do.
Just gonna sip some water, you know?
Those were fantastic questions. We loved answering those questions.
It was really fun. It was all really fun. And afterwards, we got in the cab and went to our friend Claire's defense party, and it was just a really great day. All right. Time for one final. You ready?
Are we going to do this next season?
Who knows?
Who knows? Who can predict the future? Okay. Okay. Ready? Bum, ba, ba, bum.
Try Witches Tournament! So, last episode, we asked you to tweet about some teachable moments. And guess what?
Mm-hmm.
Nobody fucking did it.
Not a single person.
Maybe it was too niche. Maybe we were thinking too much about our own lives where we are, in fact, literal teachers.
Maybe. Yeah. And like, maybe you needed a break from all of the intervening you did the previous fortnight.
Yeah.
And that's fine.
You're all doing a great job.
Yeah. You're doing your best.
We are all doing our best. Instead of specifically shouting out a Try Witches moment, we're instead, speaking of doing our best, going to shout out somebody who actually just did the thing in the spirit of our challenge and embraced a teachable moment.
Yeah, we are shouting out Evelyn Callahan at EvCal184 on Twitter, who brought to light the way in which I, in particular, was talking about gender in the episode. If you didn't hear the original audio, in following up on that teachable moment on Twitter, we edited it out so that we would not hurt people in the future.
Mm-hmm. We want to sort of mention it here because Evelyn did such a really great job of particularly of intervening in a way that was really about saying like, hey, I see what you were trying to do here. Here's a way in which you did not do the greatest job. And here is how you can do better in the future. And then when we sort of followed up with like, will you help us to make decisions about specifically how to act on this was very generous and helpful and encouraging in all of the best ways that a teacher can be in a way that really sort of helped make it possible for us to very concretely respond to what they had pointed out and to act on it in this particular case by editing the episode and adding in a note about it in the episode as well. So thank you so much, Evelyn, for really modeling exactly what embracing those teachable moments can look like.
Yeah. Yeah. You did a great job and we really appreciate it.
Yay! It's a little strange to set a 8-month Try Witches challenge, we're going to go ahead and do it anyway. We want to encourage people to keep hanging out on that hashtag. You can certainly use it, you know, if you're like, not everybody listens to the episodes in real time. So if you're listening along later on and you just want to use the hashtag to name one of the challenges you did, like, do it. We might have a hard time remembering precisely what combination of emojis we used to represent that particular challenge, but maybe you'll
get your own emoji combo.
Yeah, I mean, one can dream. So please do keep hanging out on the Try Witches, that's T-R-Y Witches hashtag. And in particular, we'd love to hear from you about if you have any goals you'd like to set for the next 8 months until we start up season 3. And just check in with us on how you're doing on those goals, whatever they are for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they can be small and they can be big. They can be medium. You get to decide. You're your own best boss.
Great.
Okay, take it away, Todd.
Witch, please, make it make sense to me. Because a muggle in me just wants to know. Oh, oh. Witch, please, make it make sense to me. Because the muggle in me just wants to know.
That we both paused to wait for Todd. Go. Read it. Do it.
Okay. So, this week's Which Please Tell Me comes from Brenda P, or at just Brenda P on Twitter. Brenda wants to know, do velas only affect hetero men? Do they affect gay men or women? Who does it affect?
Yeah, like who is affected? It's such an interesting question because it brings, like when you put pressure on it, what it's asking us is like, to what degree is magic something that reinforces social norms or subverts them, right? Mm-hmm. So is magic the kind of thing, like, does magic fuck with our ideas of sexuality and sexual orientation? Does it, draw us out of ourselves or out of our sense of ourselves in that way? Or does it reinforce, does it basically just sort of shore up pre-existing social constructs? And mm-hmm. we sort of touched on this in the question about non-binary Wiccans in the Harry Potter world, right? Mm-hmm. Like, why does the magic in the dorm rooms, what are they actually called?
Yeah, I don't know, sleeping quarters.
Yeah. And like, I can't why remember. Does the magic in Hogwarts?
Dormitories.
Yeah, in the dormitories. Keep people out based on like what seems to be like their assigned gender.
Mm-hmm.
Though, yeah, so like why would magic reinforce a social construct?
Mm-hmm.
And can we imagine magic doing something else? Mm-hmm. So like what I'm trying to think of with the velas is like, you know, what would be most interesting here, right? Mm-hmm. Like what is the reading of what velas do that would sort of open up the most interesting space to think about magic, right? Would it be more interesting to have velas just be attractive to everyone? Would that sort of do something interesting in terms of like subverting the sort of heteronormativity of the way that they're represented in the books?
Mm-hmm.
That also sort of takes consent out of the picture in a way,
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Which is like not super interesting. So
I wonder, so if we think about what we have textual evidence to prove, Ron is the only person in our main trio, even in the Weasley family, mm-hmm. who seems to be unable to control himself around Fleur. And so what I wonder is if we could think about it more in terms of the ways that people internalize certain patriarchal norms or certain patriarchal presumptions about gender and about, in particular, like beauty standards, beauty mm-hmm. norms.
Mm-hmm.
And I also wonder, and I don't know, I can't, if I ever knew, I've forgotten where J.K. Rowling got the idea for velas or like what mythology she's drawing on. But I also wonder if we might think about them like in a similar way to, say, sirens, because mm-hmm. they seem to turn it on. Mm-hmm. If I'm remembering the fourth book, it seems that they like turn on the charm in a sense to distract people.
Mm.
And so if that is maybe something that velas do on purpose, but that still makes Ron a bit of an outlier in the fact that all Fleur has to do is be around and he acts like a ding dong. And I wonder if that's less because she's part Vela and more because
he's a ding dong.
Ron is a ding dong and has like deeply screwed up misogynist ideas about like how to behave around women mm-hmm. and like women not being real people. Yeah. And that yeah. kind of thing, I wonder.
Yeah, and is also, like, a teenage boy trying to figure out how to, like, exist in a non-toxic way within heterosexuality and like obviously mm-hmm. is going to need like a lot of help learning to navigate that because he's really bad at it in book mm-hmm. 4. Yeah, like I think what we see textually just sort of reinforces like heterosexuality is really fucked up sometimes mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. and doesn't really tell us much more than that. There's no textual evidence one way or the other to say like how do velas affect people. We have no image, mm-hmm. for example, of somebody whose orientation is not to be attracted to women being attracted mm-hmm. to the velas. There's just something like what I'm thinking about right now is this episode of the podcast, The Thrilling Adventure Hour, mm-hmm. which is this podcast. Now it's not running anymore, but it's like 100% going back and listening to it. A comedy podcast that did sort of old time radio style shows. Mm-hmm. And they had different segments, like different recurring stories that they did. And one of those was called Beyond Belief. And it's this sort of like 1930s screwball comedy about this upper crust Manhattan couple who are also like mediums and defeat supernatural enemies in every episode, but primarily mm-hmm. by like sassing them. Like, so it's just about them drinking martinis and being very unimpressed by everybody and being like desperately in love with each other. And there's an episode about succubi mm-hmm. where this like the succubus shows up in their apartment, and the nature of the succubus's magic is that they both immediately fall in love with the succubus. And there's something just a little bit fun and sexy about the image of a magical creature that by the nature of their magic subverts normal ideas of sexual orientation. Mm-hmm. Which is just like, it doesn't matter if you're gay or straight. Succubus is just sexy and everybody wants them. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I think that is sometimes, in the right context, fun to think about.
Mm-hmm, for sure. Yeah. Cool. That was a great question, Brenda. Thank you so much.
It was fun to think about. Mm-hmm. All right, great. Take us home.
Witch, please, witch.
Oh, no, wait.
Oh, yes. Oh. Okay.
Okay. Okay.
So, okay.
Okay.
So, as you all know, the magnificent, marvelous Todd, our friend, our dear, dear friend, who wrote the Witch Please Tell Me theme song, is a wonderful, marvelous human being. And Todd had the wonderful and marvelous idea of opening up to listeners the option, should you be interested, to take Witch Please Tell Me's theme song and remix it or play it in your own way or rewrite it or whatever, sort of in the way that that one season of Weeds or those few seasons of Weeds have remixes and like covers of little boxes. Mm-hmm. And so if that is the thing that interests you, if you are a person who wants to make music and wants to remix the Witch Please Tell Me theme song or wants to cover it in your own style, we would encourage you to do that.
Oh my God, and please do it. Please, please do it. I want it so badly.
And get us the file. We can think up options. If you can't think of any on your own, get in touch with us. We'll like think of options of how to share it. We could do that through Dropbox or even through Gmail if it's a small enough file. But yes, please, mm-hmm. please mm-hmm. make your own remixes or covers of the Witch Please Tell Me theme song.
Oh my God, do it.
Please do it. Please do it. It'll be the best.
I know for a fact many of you are musicians. Mm-hmm. God damn it, Emily Hoven, if you don't make us a cover of the Witch Please Tell Me theme song, we're never speaking again. Okay.
I look forward to those.
It's going to be great.
Mm-hmm. Witch, please, make it make sense to me. Because a muggle in me just wants to know.
All right. Thank you, dear listeners, for joining us for season 2, the first season of Witch Please. The rest of our episodes are, as always, available at owitchplease.ca. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes or on whatever platform you enjoy getting your podcasts from. And don't forget to check out our merch at society6.com/ohwitchplease. Or you can visit through the link on our website.
Mm-hmm.
Special thanks to everyone who donated to our GoFundMe. Thanks to your generosity and perfection, we've reached our goal and thus absolutely, unequivocally promise that we will go to the Wizarding World just as soon as we can coordinate our schedules. We are going to leave the GoFundMe open for now in case anyone super duper wants to chip in, because every penny will go to offsetting the cost of that trip. So there's still time. If you happen to inherit like Aunt Lillian's trillions,
you still have time. Trillions.
Send some of that sweet dough our way.
Oh, that was good. Special thanks, as always, to Trevor Chow Fraser, our erstwhile tech support and the robot of our hearts.
Hi, how are you doing?
I recently sent him a haranguing Facebook message about the fact that I don't have permissions to add plugins on our website, so he's really earning that thank you this week. And special thanks to the Melbourne Writers Festival for inviting us to participate and for ensuring that Marcel and I could be in the same room. We're off now until season 3, but we'll be back next summer with more episodes. Until then,
we should say it together.
3, 2, 1.
Later witches. Witches.
That was not good. Sorry.
What did you say?
I said that was not good.
Oh, we can do it again.
Oh, okay.
Later, witches.
Okay, I'm going to count us in again.
Okay.
Ooh. 3, 2, 1. Later.
Later, witches.
No, I give up.
Okay.
It's too hard. It's okay.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.